Radio.
Our society needs the Christian voice. An address by Archbishop Julian Porteous to the Australian Christian Lobby.
I believe the Christian Church in Australia is entering into a new era in its history. It's entering into an era where it is no longer seen as a respected presence in society, but is viewed as an obstacle to the well-being of society by some. The Christian Church is currently being forced more and more to retire within its own walls. There's a growing anti-Christian sentiment where the Christian churches are regarded as being out of touch with the realities of contemporary life and seen as wedded to some bygone era. The dominant view now is that humanity can and ought to finally throw off the remaining vestiges of the Christian religion and be liberated from what it sees as an oppressive morality. With this, people claim, humanity will be finally able to realise its true destiny and greatness. They see that we've reached a moment where there is a final emancipation from servitude to Christian morality. Attempts are already well underway in the West to seek to marginalise and limit the participation of Christians in the public life, particularly through enactments of legislation which require Christians to violate their consciences. In the US, for instance, we have seen the quite calculated move by the Obama administration to force particularly Catholic institutions to offer healthcare packages that pay for contraception and abortifacients. And so too, state and Commonwealth governments are beginning to introduce laws which are directly aimed at restricting the freedom of Christian organisations. We mentioned this evening about the Victorian government seeking to bring in the change in adoption laws, and the original structure of that law was to give no exemption to Christian organisations. Here in Tasmania, the 2013, I think rather misnamed Reproduction Health Act, not only legalised abortion in this state, but introduced this bubble zone, this 150 metre exclusion zone around abortion clinics to prevent any form of what it referred to as prohibited behaviour, especially what amounts to any form of counselling or protest. It's interesting to note that historically, pro-life groups here in Tasmania have not undertaken such actions around abortion clinics. In other words, there was no need here in Tasmania to include these items in the Act. On census, there were people just wanting to make a point. Of course, in doing so, the Act attacked two of the most fundamental human rights: the right to freedom of assembly and the right to freedom of speech. The exclusion zone some way expresses disapproval of abortion outside an abortion clinic. In addition, this Act required doctors who have a conscientious objection to abortion to provide women seeking abortions with, as it says, a list of prescribed health services from which women may seek advice, information or counselling on the full range of pregnancy services. In other words, they have to refer her to services which offer abortion, thus violating their consciences. Governments hostile to Christianity have become more emboldened than ever to pass legislation which they know is incompatible with Christian beliefs and practices. One would expect that this will escalate in the years ahead. We're confronted with a new era of legal persecution of Christians by the state. Along with this more recent attack on Christians, we have witnessed the slower and longer-term effort to overthrow the Christian moral framework which has informed Western societies for the last millennia. Now, why has this occurred? As I said, in the Western world, we are witnessing the final phase of the victory of secular liberalism as the new cultural theology. This secular liberalism has its origins in the Enlightenment. It's become a key influence in the transformation of Western society. In more recent times, its principal vehicle has been the social movement referred to as the sexual revolution. This atheistic humanism is based on a false theological anthropology, or conception of the human person. It views the human person as most fully human when separated from God. On this understanding, the human person is held to be the final authority, not only of morality, but of existence itself. The US Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy embodied this understanding when he claimed in the 1992 ruling of Planned Parenthood versus Casey that, and I quote, "At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life." To define one's own concept. Yet the Church maintains paradoxically that the truth is only in the mystery of the incarnate Word. The truth is that only in the mystery of the incarnate Word does the mystery of man take on light. Humanity is not only fully revealed to itself in the person of Jesus Christ. The human cannot be grasped only in terms of the human. Rather, it requires the divine. To understand the human, we can only look beyond the human to what is permanent and lasting, to the truth, which for us is Jesus Christ. It is only in the truth that man is revealed to himself. Over the past 50 years in particular, we've witnessed the rise of an atheistic humanism in attempts mostly successful to redefine the dominant societal understanding of human sexuality, of marriage and of family. In a relatively short period of time, we've witnessed an extraordinary shift in attitudes around human sexuality, which has resulted legislative reform to enshrine new social mores. Arguably, the critical moment centred on the widespread acceptance of contraception was the moment that began this change, because it's fundamentally separated the procreative and unitive dimensions of human sexual relations. By providing the ability for couples to intentionally remove the generative dimension from the sexual expression of their love, they allow for the widespread acceptability of sex as an end in itself. So cohabiting couples, or more particular, single women, could now engage in sexual intimacy without the worry of unwed pregnancy and the social stigma it attracted. The wholesale availability of contraceptives, especially the pill, led to a change in societal attitudes towards sex. But Paul VI, in his 1968 encyclical Humanae Vitae, saw that once there was a means to separate the act of sexual intercourse from its life-giving dimension, there would be a radical increase in promiscuity, which he prophetically saw would result in the devaluing or sexual objectification of women. Western society has witnessed a dramatic change in its attitudes towards sexuality. We have seen the moral acceptability of same-sex sexual relationships. And once laws prohibiting same-sex sexual expression were repealed, the homosexual lobby went on the offensive, pushing for the legal equality of same-sex relationships with marriage, and more recently, legal redefinition of marriage to include same-sex relationships. In all this, there was one voice that constantly challenged these changes in society's attitudes. It was the Christian Church. Those who advocated sexual liberation in all its forms knew that there was one key focus of resistance. They knew that they had to nullify the influence of the churches in the legislature and in public debate. It was interesting to note that when Katie Faust was on Q&A, Tony Jones kept persisting with the question, "Are you a Christian?" The implication was obvious, that if she was a Christian, then her personal experience could be discounted. These days, it is a liability to be recognised as a Christian in the public debate. A Christian is considered to be biased, bigoted, and judgmental. Any Christian who expresses their views on matters of sexuality, marriage, and family is considered to be guilty of hate speech. Of course, one reason why Christians have always fallen foul of totalitarian regimes is that their ultimate allegiance is to a higher power, the truth itself, who is God. This was a problem for the Romans, who required citizens to worship the emperor. This was a problem, too, for the UWSR, because believers would not give their ultimate allegiance to atheistic materialism. History has shown that Christians are the subject of persecution because despite their willingness to be good citizens, they will always see themselves as pilgrims on this earth and know that their true homeland is in heaven. In an address to the cardinal electors following the death of Pope John Paul II, the then Cardinal Ratzinger used a term which aptly captures what is occurring in Western societies. He spoke of the dictatorship of relativism. This phrase captures something very important about the rise of relativism. Contrary to its own sloganeering that it is all about tolerance and diversity, relativism necessarily imposes its own controversial anthropology and morality. It claims the right to be the only way of seeing reality. Any other view cannot be tolerated. It argues that the public square should only be open to thought and argument stripped of any reliance on religious belief or presupposition. It sees religion as a private matter that should not influence the public debate. However, it itself is a religion, if by religion we mean a worldview with an accompanying set of moral beliefs. Secular liberalism is a way of understanding human existence, and it affirms certain moral positions. It is not neutral and is not a value-free zone. The charge is often levelled at Christians that they are seeking to impose their morality on society. However, secular liberals are the ones imposing their views of human existence and their morality on others. Pope John Paul II answered this charge very well when he said that the Church seeks not to impose, but rather to propose its views to society. Secular liberalism seeks to eliminate any consideration of the divine from human society. It proposes a freedom in matters sexual that is in fact simply license to do whatever one wants. Again, Pope John Paul II accurately spoke of the eclipse of God resulting in the eclipse of man. When God is removed from human life, humanity, in fact, loses sight of itself. It cannot make sense of itself. Humanity enters the darkness because the light has been taken away. And what is lauded as the new freedom simply becomes a path to unhappiness and the breakdown of the quality of human life. Pope Benedict XVI speaks of this as a kind of an amnesia, which is nonetheless a denial of the treasure of our faith, denial that could lead to the loss of our deepest identity. Cultural forgetfulness is one of the great problems of our time. We forget that our society only exists as it does because of its Christian inheritance. Without this, we cannot but return to the pagan dictum of power as the ultimate authority in human matters. If there is no objective truth, no divine which transcends the human, then final authority in human existence can only be the Nietzschean will to power, where the only absolute is the rule of the stronger will. We are faced with a stark choice. The way of Christianity, which aspires to goodness, truth, and beauty, or the way of nihilistic atheism, where there is only the rule of the stronger. As Pope Benedict noted, a freedom which is hostile or indifferent to God becomes self-negating and does not guarantee full respect for others. Christianity is a true champion of human freedom. The idea of religious freedom itself is a fruit of a Christian view of life. Human freedom is of fundamental importance to the Christian, for at the very heart of God's nature is love. And love is only possible where there is freedom. Authentic love cannot be forced. It can only be the free, intentional action of the individual. Related to this is Christianity's elevation of human nature to be a reflection of the divine. For human beings are only able to love God because they have been first made in the image and likeness of the divine. Fundamental to Christianity is the view that every human being has an essential dignity flowing from this creation in the Imago Dei. A religious view of reality should be given respect in the public square. Public debate is best served by a vigorous, honest interchange between rival positions in the search for wisdom and truth. It is important that public debate is conducted in a robust but fair exchange. This brings us to the related point of referring to Christians as bigots simply for expressing their belief on a matter that concerns human sexuality or marriage. The use of inflammatory rhetoric, which in fact bears no relationship to the facts, can only signal a degrading of social debate. Reason is replaced by emotion. Currently, the public debate on questions of the definition of marriage is more subject to vehement emotional reactions than to rational argument. This needs to change as we approach the plebiscite. Christianity has offered and will continue to offer real social benefits to society. In the past, Christianity was recognised and valued because it did contribute to social well-being. It fostered higher moral standards through the promotion of a commitment to a life of virtue and self-sacrifice. I noted coming here to Tasmania that in the early settlement of Australia, there was a strong view that chaplains should be appointed to work with convicts as it was recognised that such men could assist in the reformation of the convicts. And that is why the English government was willing to pay even Catholic priests to act as chaplains in Van Diemen's Land. The very first priests to work in Van Diemen's Land were paid by the English government. Religion was seen as beneficial to the social order. Without the call to religious belief, which is a call to a more noble, to more noble virtues, society is forced to rely upon law and regulation to achieve a just ordering. Christianity has made a greater contribution to social stability of Western societies because it has promoted virtue. So what can be done? I believe we are entering a new era for the Catholic, for the Christian Church in Australian society. And it will mean that we must position ourselves differently than we have in the past, when our presence was respected and our faith and works encouraged. Now is the time, more than ever, for Christian men and women to stand up and oppose this attempt to silence the Christian voice in our society, and in particular in the political realm. It will be important to challenge the media to give fair exposure to a Christian perspective on social issues. And secondly, it is important that Christians do not feel coward or powerless. Australia remains a majority Christian country, yet our voice has largely been silenced. It is important that Christians become active in politics in whatever way their time, talents, and energy allow. The Australian Christian Lobby has provided an important witness as to how Christians can be engaged politically, and I thank them for their leadership in this area. Of course, we should be under no illusion that such involvement in politics is going to be an easy task. Yet the Christian life is not an easy life. As Christ taught, his way, the Christian way, is a narrow way that demands a giving of ourselves, not just part, that part which is convenient or easy. We need to continue to engage in the public debate and to seek opportunities to present our understanding on key issues. And we should expect to have the right to be heard. We should not underestimate the importance of the power of prayer. Our approach to political matters must never simply be a matter of seeking worldly power or success. It must be never about using any means necessary to achieve our goal. Prayer must always remain our primary weapon, for we can achieve nothing through our efforts alone, but all things are possible with God. We must ensure that we continue the custom that we have of constantly praying for our political leaders. But this now needs to be done with greater earnestness. I believe that increasingly we will have the most, that what will have the most impact will be our Christian witness, particularly the witness of our Christian marriages and families. I believe they will in time shine out like bright stars, as St. Paul says in 2 Philippians 15. We must encourage our fellow Christians to live lives of Christian excellence. In this, we need to strengthen the life of our Christian communities so that the members of our communities are more able to live the Christian life as different from the patterns of life becoming more common in our society. It will be especially important to teach our children the beauty of God's plan for sexuality. We can offer them a positive and life-affirming vision for for sexuality, marriage, and family. We also need to find ways to present a positive and inspiring message on this subject to society as a whole. There is no doubt that Australian society is moving in a particular direction at this time. The forces at work have been growing in strength, and we will not be able to turn the tide in the short term. However, truth will have a way of coming to the fore, and freedom will not be trampled down for long. We should hold on to the belief that eventually things will change. Patterns of behaviour that currently are promoted will be proven to be damaging. The bad fruits will become evident. We are entering a new phase of Christian life. We will have to learn to live under various forms of persecution, but we will live as people of hope. We will live as people who know that God has been victorious in Jesus Christ. We will be hopefully purified and also strengthened in this process. We will be readied to once again go forth with a message of truth, of goodness, and of beauty. And this message will triumph over the darkness that sadly is descending upon our beloved nation. Amen.
That was Archbishop Julian Porteous with Our Society Needs the Christian Voice. For more information on the Australian Christian Lobby, visit acl.org.au. And for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.